Hello and welcome to today's broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. Glad you can join me. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic and scenic Roane County, Tennessee. Today, at the top of the second hour, I am happy to be joined by retired Brigadier General A.J. Tony Tata. He'll be joining us to talk about Donald Trump and his many choices of retired generals to be part of his staff and administration. As we have those discussions, I'm sure things will be rather interesting. Also, in the meanwhile, we're going to have some of the usual topics. In the first hour, we're going to be discussing a lot of, well, what I tend to categorize as crybaby antics from former Clinton campaign operatives and generally Democratic operatives from across the board in their many different efforts to still try and delegitimize the election of Donald Trump and still attempting, even at this late hour, to try and derail the official Electoral College election of Donald Trump, which takes place, oh my, tomorrow. All right, in the meanwhile, we're going to start with the outrage of the week. And this particular week, it's not all that surprising. It has a little something to do with Michelle Obama. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Michelle once again makes the list. This week, like a lot of other weeks, it can be challenging to select a single outrage week. This week, however, it became very easy as snippets, trailers, teasers, views of Michelle Obama's set down interview with Oprah were made public. The particulars involve a lot of information in regards to hope for America and how suddenly we're already feeling the hopelessness that comes from knowing that Donald Trump will be our next president of the United States. It's outrageous because, first of all, this is a woman who had spent her adult life not even being proud to be an American. Not until Barack Hussein Alu Akbar Obama, her husband, at least legally at any rate, became the Democratic nominee and then became the occupier of the White House and then managed to, at least on paper, managed to become the occupier for a second term. Then the whole time she's living the life, she's living the dream, she's experiencing everything that comes from living off of other people's hard work, aka the taxpayers' dollars, living an extravagant life, doing things with entire teams of people traveling with her to keep her safe, to keep the kids safe, to make sure that she has just the right dress, to make sure she has all the perfect makeup, this grand effort to make her seem far more elegant than she actually is, so she can look the part, play the role of what she believed the First Lady should be. Now, there's also hints here and there amongst this interview that perhaps Michelle will consider running for office herself now. After all, she does have Hillary as an example to try to follow. At the end of the day, this is an outrage because it just once again proves how out of touch not only she, but the entire political left are, not just with America, but with people in general. The majority of us do not have six-figure salaries that we get to travel around the world with. And even those who do among us have salaries that high. Many of us live in parts of the country where six figures alone, if you're on the low end, still means you're struggling to keep a roof over your head and necessities if you have a family of three or more. These are people who are taking advantage of their opportunities. But to sit back and try to say that there is no hope for America because Barack Hussein Alu Akbar Obama will not be the president in another 2 months, that there is no hope for America because Donald Trump will be the president in less than 2 months. It's outrageous. Now, the whole precept of acting presidential and what it means to be presidential and the protocols that have existed literally for centuries at this point, well, they were all thrown out the window by this particular occupier of the White House in the first place. The very notion that folks on the left, particularly Democratic operatives, complain that Donald Trump does not act presidential is obscene. Literally obscene that they would make that statement, because tell me one occasion other than Hurricane Sandy, when the occupier was walking hand in hand with Chris Christie on the beach in New Jersey, did he ever once behave presidential? It wasn't during the attacks in Benghazi. It wasn't in dealing with Russia. It wasn't in dealing with the failed policies in Syria. We're drawing a red line in the sand. Oh, you crossed it? Well, we're going to draw another and another. And okay, now we're just going to pretend like nothing's happening there. How presidential was that? Where's the hope for Americans that lost their jobs and who continue to have their jobs just gone to the point that they couldn't find work till they stopped looking? Barack Obama has some of the best unemployment numbers for the last two administrations. Why? Because you simply stopped counting the millions of people who are out of work for too long. The total number of unemployed and underemployed individuals is hugely underestimated in the numbers that give credit to Barack Obama for doing something positive for the economy. Even now, there's talk, even by folks who are supposed to be conservative, about how the economy has improved. Yet there are very few people who feel any real world results from that. The best news for our economy that has come out has been since Donald Trump became president-elect, where he talked the likes of Carrier, for example, into not leaving the country when they were planning to. Now, granted, I'm not a big fan about how they plan on keeping them here, because they're going to get government taxpayer dollars to do it. Now, if I worked for Carrier, I'm sure that I would feel pretty good about that, because it means my check's going to keep coming. American workers are going to keep American jobs. I tend to think there's probably a solution that can still accomplish that without requiring taxpayer dollars. But the point of the fact is that that's just one company. Now, Donald Trump folks are critical of how he's doing it. They're critical of the fact that he's made statements that have hurt businesses and the stock market as far as their company value, forcing them, in effect, in order to perform their fiduciary responsibilities, to play ball. Donald Trump will tell you he's simply utilizing negotiation techniques. At the end of the day, you have to decide which is your preference. Do you want the person in the office of the president utilizing whatever means are at their disposal to manipulate companies into staying here? Or do you want it 100% above board with presidents behaving presidential? Because if it's the last one you want, then we've been off base for a little while in who we've selected as our candidates, let alone becoming our president. We need to take a look in the mirror and reevaluate exactly where we're at. But all of that still comes back to this. Michelle Obama tried to make it sound as if all hope for America is lost. It's outrageous to say something about an incoming administration before you have left the White House in such a fashion. It's not unexpected in this case. It's, in fact, is pretty well predictable. But it is still outrageous to make those statements because, Michelle, it's pretty obvious that the only people who suddenly feel hopeless are people like you. People who want to continue to take advantage of the opportunities presented only by being in that office, by getting to spend millions of dollars just to take a simple trip, but not to have to spend a single penny of your own. Michelle, the rest of America already feeling a boost that you are about to depart the White House. But political operatives that align themselves with the propagandists, with the so-called progressives, with the Marxists, and with the tax them to death, force them to follow your agenda, the nudge squad brigades, those types of political operatives, that's you in your ilk. Yeah, I can imagine you are probably feeling pretty hopeless right about now, because this individual who's about to take office has named people to positions, and assuming that they manage to get through the confirmation process, will then be in positions of power over departments which they deem to be overpowered or unnecessary. Meaning, strictly from a constitutional standpoint, they're exactly the right people for the job. They will limit authority. They will reduce the federal government grant in areas in which there should be no footprint of notice. Michelle Obama, you need to send a positive message of hope and change if you want to continue the legacy that you and your Democratic allies want to pretend exists under the Obama regime. Because for the first 2 years at least, revisionist historians, which unfortunately makes up the majority of them in the political world, will insist that whatever improvements that take place immediately under Trump will be because of things that Barack had set in motion first. We know this. We've seen it a million times. So set back and talk about the continuation of what has moved forward. Give people a reason to, whether you like it or not, the job that you, your husband, and all your little operatives all signed up for isn't the one you seem to think, of self-enrichment and self-entitlement. The job was public service. The job was to do the best that you can for the American people. And that means you need to make them all believe. Positive spin with hope for the future. Be prepared to be critical of that which needs to be criticized, but at the same time, tell every American there's a reason to be optimistic, that a new day is dawning, and that certain things will continue and certain new ideas will be tried. And we will see once and for all which ideas work and which ideas don't. That would be the best thing for you to do. Because there's a lot of us out here who already know which ideas work and which don't. Because we've already seen the writing on the wall. We've seen the proof in the pudding. There is enough evidence that those of us who've been paying attention, we know. Leftist Marxist ideas always fail. And they collapse governments that start with the best of intentions. Michelle Obama, Oprah, this last-ditch effort at anti-Trump propaganda, it's a waste of time and it shows your true colors. Not that you haven't already shown these colors on multiple occasions before. America does not want or need your Marxist ideology. We have fought wars to stop it. We have fought wars to stop the spread of it in other nations. We certainly don't want it here. And you can keep trying to package it, and you can continue your so-called progressive efforts in trying to run and ruin public education and turn it into nothing but indoctrination centers. You can continue to try and be the politically correct thought police, all of this, you can do that. But at the end of the day, there are always going to be people like myself who are going to stand up and voice the truth against your actions. And while you may continue to gain numbers because you continue to have people who grow up in your tainted educational web, there will still be those that waken to your lies. We saw that with this education, with this electoral cycle. Those who supported Bernie Sanders instead of your hand-picked Hillary Clinton candidate, they didn't do so because they really embraced socialism. Many of them aren't old enough to understand yet why socialism doesn't work, but they embraced it because they realized that they were getting a level of honesty and truth from Bernie Sanders that they would never get from Hillary Clinton. It isn't that they're against Trump, and it wasn't that they thought it would be cool to be a communist, although I'm sure a few of them probably did. The majority simply recognized the distinct odor of bovine excrement, and they wanted nothing to do with it. They do want real change, and they want some hope of an America that works for them. It's just simply many of them are not experienced enough yet to understand that what will work best for them and everyone else in this country has nothing to do with groupthink and group mentality, but it has everything to do with personal responsibility and personal work ethic. That is the key difference between success and the kind of life that requires perpetual government assistance. So I guess for the outrage of the week, Hillary doesn't make the list other than just a tertiary candidate. It is the Michelle Obama-Oprah interview. And if you haven't seen it yet, by all means, check it out. And I think you will find for yourself exactly what I've been saying. All right, now let's get to today's our one main topic, especially now that I've ranted for almost 30 minutes. Free and fair election. Is that what we had? Did Donald Trump become president-elect because our election worked the way it's supposed to? Or was there outside interference by the Russians to the point that it caused issue? At this point, I have heard many conservatives make the statement that they don't care. They got the result they wanted, and it doesn't matter if the Russians were involved. The real question is, why should we care? The answer there is simple. We should not. This is one thing that the Democrats are right about. You're only going to hear this when the Democratic candidate loses. But they are right when they say that we as a people should not want any outside influence on the outcome of our elections. We should not want any foreign intervention in interfering with the outcome of who's going to become our leader. The Democrats have been crying foul since just before the Democratic National Convention, which is, of course, what brought Debbie Wasserman Schultz's run as the chairperson of the National Democratic Committee to an end. A series of emails leaked from WikiLeaks showing that the Democrats never intended to have a nomination process which would have allowed anyone other than Hillary Clinton the possibility of becoming their nominee. They were very upset about all this. Over and over again, since that moment, we continue to hear about potential relations between Trump administrative selections, and Russia. But we have heard from WikiLeaks that, at the very least, the DNC emails had nothing to do with Russia. Now, they continue to say they did. Well, just this past week, there was an exclusive story ran on the Daily Mail that says that an ex-British ambassador, who is now a WikiLeaks operative, claims Russia did not provide Clinton emails and that they were handed over to him personally at a DC park by an intermediary for a, quote, disgruntled Democratic whistleblower. I actually used the term blowers, so there was more than one. Now, can you believe this story? That much I don't know. They work for WikiLeaks. They could be simply trying to protect their sources still. But I don't think we can ignore the story. We need to pay attention to it. A WikiLeaks envoy claims that he personally received Clinton campaign emails in Washington, D.C. after they were leaked by disgruntled whistleblowers and not hacked by Russia. Craig Murray, former British ambassador to Uzbekistan, and a close associate of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, told the Daily Mail that he flew to Washington, D.C. for a clandestine handoff with one of the email sources back in September. Okay, September. Quote, neither of the leaks came from the Russians. This according to Murray. And he said this in an interview with the Daily Mail back on this past Tuesday. The source had legal access to the information. The documents came from inside leaks, not hacks. His account contradicts directly the version of his account. Are you listening? Contradicts directly the version of how thousands of Democratic emails were published before the election being advanced by U.S. intelligence. Murray is a controversial figure who has removed from his post. He was removed from his post as a British ambassador amid allegations of misconduct. He was cleared of those, but left the diplomatic services in rather acrimonious fashion. His links to WikiLeaks are well known now, and while his account is likely to be seen as both unprovable and possibly biased, it is also the first intervention by WikiLeaks since reports surfaced last week that the CIA believes Russian hackers were behind the Clinton emails and to help hand the election to Donald Trump. Murray's claims about the origins of the Clinton campaign emails comes as U.S. intelligence officers are increasingly confident that Russian hackers infiltrated both the Democratic National Committee and the email accounts of top Clinton aide John Podesta. In Podesta's case, his account appeared to have been both compromised through a basic phishing scheme, according to the New York Times and what they reported on this past Wednesday. U.S. intelligence officials have reportedly told members of Congress during classified briefings that they believe Russia's passed the documents on to WikiLeaks as part of influence operation to swing the election in favor of Donald Trump. But Murray vehemently insists that the DNC and Podesta emails published by WikiLeaks did not come from the Russians and were in fact given to the whistleblowing group by Americans who had authorized access to the information. So, what does that really mean? if this story is true, and there's no reason to doubt WikiLeaks on this, the information they passed was out there, but if this story is true, that means that the CIA and at least some portions of the FBI, although not all of them, are intentionally deceiving the American public. Because the Democrats are running around television right now, newspapers and radios, interviews, and whoever will listen to them, talking Russia, 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 Russia. Russia influenced this. Russia did this. Russia cost us the election. It had nothing to do with the fact that the American people did not trust Hillary Rodham Clinton. It had nothing to do with the fact that they smelt so much bovine excrement emanating from Hillary Rodham Clinton every time she spoke politics or policy. It had nothing to do with the fact that several Americans just see her image and their stomach starts to turn. No, none of that. It was all because the Russians hacked us. Now, we've talked about these hacked emails from the Democratic National Committee going into the convention several times on this show. And the biggest thing that continues to just slap me in the face, as far as these stories are concerned, is the fact that Democrats don't deny any of the information that was leaked amid these emails. I mean, no matter what's to deny, they've got the emails right there. But they don't, they've only a few folks. Now, one or two people have claimed that some of these emails were fabrications. But the majority of the emails have been left unquestioned, unchallenged. They have not publicly disputed the accuracy of the emails released, meaning that their actual feelings of detest to the average American, their actual feelings of detest that someone like Bernie Sanders would even challenge Hillary, all of these real-world revelations that would have possibly swayed American voters, none of that is challenged. It's always been about what's the source, what's the source, what's the source. I'm willing to guess the majority of the people that worked inside the campaign probably have a couple of good ideas of who those sources could be. Again, assuming that this story from Murray is 100% on the level. Now, I'm not saying you should take Murray's word for it on this. I tend to actually kind of believe this, but that's me. I'm not telling you to. I always say it at the end of every show. Don't take my word for it. This comes across to me as something that rings true. And maybe that's my personal bias. It could be. I'll admit it. This is something I would rather believe. I would rather believe that the Russians had nothing to do All right, ladies and gentlemen, I once again have experienced technical issues with the fine folks of BTR, and I have no idea how much of the last little bit I've been going over has been lost because I was scrolling through other pages as I was looking for information and as I pushed forward. So, what I have is very little option but to try and go back and edit the show at a later point. It's, again, very disappointing, and as I continue to have more and more issues with BTR, I am also forced with the very idea and notion that perhaps it's simply time to change platforms for the show. It does not seem likely that every single conservative host on this network, with maybe one or two exceptions, seems to continuously have issues, especially when they directly call out this administration or the failed attempt for Hillary Clinton. And yet, the overwhelming majority of so-called progressive shows that are on this network never really seem to have a technical issue, at least not one that can be attributed to something to do with the BTR side of it. My anger and frustration is growing immensely, especially as I continue to make efforts to elevate the level of the program. You've missed some of my best commentary, and when I get on a roll and get passionate about stuff because either there's a connection issue or there's an audio issue, and they constantly tell me it's on my end, as they constantly tell every other host that I've talked to that seems to have the same problems. It is difficult at best to maintain a program that has the possibility of being informative and fun. I've spent the biggest part of the last hour split between the outrage of Michelle Obama on Oprah, and then going down these various stories having to do with Democrats trying to talk ill about the election results. What I may very well have to do is go to a different platform and just broadcast again. But the problem with that is on the other platforms, it's a little bit more difficult to have the guests on. It's a little more difficult. It's not impossible. Now, I don't know how long the connection was lost. For those of you who were listening live, I apologize. For those of you who have still continued to listen live to this point, thank you. And there were folks that were listening. I can see that much, I know for a fact. So again, thank you for being here, even through whatever amount of dead space it was. It's disappointing at best, but I only have about 5 minutes before time to bring on my guest, retired Brigadier General A.J. Tata. So I'm not really able to go back and even recap much of what I did previously. And at the time that I had just found out that I had the dead air, I really didn't have much time left, but just enough to finish up the last little bit I was going to cover before the interview, that being either the political theater or actual infighting between Loretta Lynch and John Panetta. It's hard to tell if this is legitimate or not. It certainly seems legitimate. It could be some efforts on the part of Loretta Lynch to give the FBI and the Justice Department were in fact trying to do the right thing at all the time, and that the private server and Hillary Clinton email issue was handled properly, which most of us, I think, pretty well know better. But at any rate, Attorney General Loretta Lynch is defending the FBI against allegations that the Bureau mishandled investigations of emails hacked from the Democrats, and focused way too much attention on Hillary Clinton's private email server. Quote, I can tell you that the investigation was taken seriously from the beginning. This, of course, is Lynch in an interview that she gave on CNN that, of course, airs today. She was responding to complaints raised by Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta in an op-ed published in the Washington Post this past Friday. Podesta, who had his Gmail account hacked during the campaign, argued that, quote, something is deeply broken at the FBI. He pointed to reports that FBI investigators failed to warn Democratic National Committee officials last September after discovering that Russian hackers were attempting to infiltrate the party's email system. At the same time, Podesta noted investigators were traveling the country to interview witnesses as part of the FBI's probe into Clinton's private email server. Now, I don't know, like I said, if this is legit or just political theater trying to push this idea that we were doing the right thing all along. But just FYI, John, there would be reasons why the FBI would take the private server issue a little more seriously. Because Hillary Clinton, in fact, broke federal law in having that private server set up and transmitting classified information. It's a clear violation of the law, but she's been given a free pass because reasons. But the attempted breach into the DNC by the Russians that they've acknowledged from the previous year was just an attempted breach with no proof that they actually did breach. And the DNC is, for all intents and purposes, nothing more than a private club. So if they were given any warning at all, it was more than what was necessary. All right, so I'm going to take a few seconds to try and contact the general. And when we get back, presumably, I'll have the guest on the air. So stay with me, and I'll be right back. Thank you very much for staying with us. And right now, I would like for you to welcome with me retired Brigadier General Tony Tata. He's here with us today to discuss some of the picks that President-elect Donald Trump has made. And we'll get into that in just a few seconds. But first of all, General, thank you very much for being here today and welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Tim. Thank you very much.
All right. I'm anxious to get your opinions. A lot of folks on the left have been literally just hitting the panic button. Of course, they've been doing that since Donald Trump won the election. But they seem to really think that it's a sign of very scary things that Donald so far has selected four retired generals to be part of his administration. I wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, sure. You know, it's just a continuation of the left's disbelief that conservatism won the day in our country. They got tired of a feckless, wandering foreign policy. They know the world is in danger right now because of Obama's policies. And so it's this reaction where you're saying, let's blame it on Russia, or let's pick apart his cabinet picks, is all a distraction effort from the fact that they got beat like a drum on November 8th. And it was a wholesale repudiation of, Obama, of Clinton, of all the policies the American people are tired of. And so what President-elect Trump is doing is he's picking men and women that are change agents and that know how to win, fight and win wars, that know how to advise him on national security, that know how to protect our borders. And, the left is very convenient with their selective memory. They forget that Obama had, five or so generals. He had Jim Jones that went down in flames as a national security advisor. He has Eric Shinseki that went down in flames as a veterans secretary, probably the biggest scandal in recent memory that really has not gotten enough national attention is all the veterans waiting in line that are dying. That's, on Obama and Shinseki. Then he had David Hayden or General Hayden, who was the CIA director. He had General Clapper, one of the most dishonest men in Washington, D.C., and that's saying a lot. And as the DNI, a National Intelligence Director. And so Obama had all these people, but nobody, whiffed at it. And now that Trump is bringing in seasoned veterans, suddenly it's a crime to hire somebody that has served their country in uniform. And I personally take, huge offense to that. The patriotism and valor and fidelity of the men and women on the battlefield for the last 16 years or last 30 or 40 years, depending on who you're talking about, has been, very strong, and has been up there with, some of the most in need times that we've had, where we've needed great leaders leading our nation. And these men, Mike Flynn, who I know personally, and Mattis and Kellogg, these are all people I know, and they could be making millions of dollars in the private world, but they're giving that up to make $200,000 and serve in the Trump administration because they believe that they can take the country in the right direction. So, in my mind, these are good picks. I know some of them, and I know the caliber of person that they are, and the left is just trying to distract people, and quite frankly, they're trying to blame the Russians, and they're trying to say already Trump is militarizing his cabinet, and that's they're trying to scare the Electoral College to try to change the outcome, and that's treason in my book.
All right. I certainly can't argue against any of that. A lot of what we hear, though, from these folks, and I just want to get this out there so you can officially respond. I don't buy into this by any means. But a lot of the folks on the left are also insinuating that you want military people because they're used to just taking orders. You don't get to the rank of general, regardless of how many stars you end up with, by just blindly following orders, and certainly, especially not in the modern military, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's insulting, and that's just more of the left. All these Hollywood people that make these movies, they actually believe what they make and don't study history. Some of the most creative people, such as, let's pick Eisenhower, five-star general, he knew the country needed to be better connected. So he had the vision to create the interstate system. And it's that kind of thing. Nobody was giving him an order to create the interstate system. And every person, you know, whether you're a sergeant or a captain or a general, you've got to be creative. You've got to be an independent thinker. And of course, if you get a order to go, execute X mission, you're gonna figure out how to do it. But they don't tell you how to execute the mission. They're just telling you to execute the mission. And so if President-elect Trump has a conversation with General Kelly that says, "Hey, let's build a wall. Let's create better security along the Mexican border." Kelly's going to get creative with that and figure out a way to stop this tide of illegal immigration into the United States. They're flooding across right now because Obama's shut off the alarms and the spotlights down there, and actually said, if you're coming, you better come now. And President Obama's philosophy is, let's get as many of these people in here right now so we can get them on the Democrat voter rolls so we can, expand our power base. And, Obama's philosophy is, a weaker America makes for a stronger world. And he goes to the Jeremiah Wright School of Foreign Policy, which is hate America first. And so when you see President Obama on Comedy Central digging on the president-elect, making fun of him and talking about Russia, and you hear Michelle Obama on the Oprah show saying for the first time in her life she's felt no hope, that is unconscionable. That is borderline treasonous to be undermining the peaceful transition of power. They are stoking fear. And that's what the Democrats do. They stoke fear so that they can have people clinging to them. And they are not the party of hope and change. They have been the party of lining their own pockets. Hillary's pay-to-play scam with the State Department, and Obama says he's not going to leave D.C. So I can he'll be man-to-man on Donald Trump. It's going to be an interesting 4 years, and the Democrats, after 8 years of power, are going to do everything they can to make sure the Republicans are out of power in 4 years. If you get 8 years out of it, then what you've got is you've flushed the toilet of all the liberal social experimentation folks, and so they're going to be trying to go after 4 years. And they're going to try to make the because they don't care about the country. What they care about is power. And so they're going to try to make Donald Trump fail. They're already doing it. And so it's a good thing Trump's got a thick skin and a good vision, and he's hiring good people.
All right. The real positive here, and I haven't heard enough people saying this. I've heard a few, but not enough. The real positive here is he's selecting people, not just the generals, but a few other folks too, that have honest to goodness, real world experience that is results driven. Is that the best way to sum up his picks to this point in your mind, especially with the generals?
Yeah, no, and I would say, pick Betsy DeVos, the education nominee. She's a results driven, data driven education leader that believes in school choice, and she comes from the school of Michelle Rhee, who I worked with in Washington, D.C. public schools, and Michelle is all about data-driven results. You don't go based on how good everybody feels about their school. What you go based on is, how much growth are you getting out of a school? How much proficiency do you have in a school? And that's the data-driven results that he's looking for. And with Tillerson at ExxonMobil, the Secretary of State, there's a guy who's led a global enterprise, has contacts and negotiations all throughout the world, and in particular in the Middle East, understands the importance of stability in the Middle East because that's where we get a good majority of the fossil fuels. And so here's a guy that can negotiate. And what president-elect Trump wants is people who can negotiate good deals, not ideological deals that help our enemies, such as the Iran nuclear deal. That was just bizarro world, giving them billions of dollars and then telling them they can build a nuke in 10 years. It is just that subscription to the Jeremiah Wright School of Foreign Policy of hate America that resulted in that Iran deal. And it's a terrible deal. And so, you know, I think he's going to try to undo that and have Tillerson do something better. But it's those kinds of things that I think, you know, he's looking for results-oriented, data-driven leaders.
All right. Let's switch gears just a little bit. I just have a few minutes left with you. I wanted to talk a little bit about 3 Minutes to Midnight.
Yeah, sure. 3 Minutes to Midnight is a hardcover book published by Kinsey & Bucks. It's out in stores now. It's a great Christmas gift. It was received a starred review from Publishers Weekly. Foreign and Domestic, its predecessor, was nominated for Best Thriller of the Year last year. It's in paperback right now, so that'd be a great 1-2 Christmas present for all your listeners to buy Foreign and Domestic in 3 Minutes to Midnight for a family member that enjoys Lee Child's Jack Reacher or David Baldacci's John Polar Hero or Vince Flynn or Brad Thor. It's very much in that vein of thriller, and the hero is a Native American from the Outer Banks of North Carolina called Chayton Mahegan, and he is out of the Army now, and so these are not military thrillers per se. They're the protagonist is former military, but he's in small town North Carolina in 3 Minutes to Midnight searching for his mother's killer, and it's very much a, kind of a procedural. And so if you like Michael Connelly or John Sanford, very much in that vein of thriller novel, 3 Minutes to Midnight and Foreign and Domestic. You can find them on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or in the actual bookstores, or go to my website, ajtata.com, ajtata.com.
All right. And for the folks that catch the show later on in podcast form or in the archives, I do have links to ajtata.com and the links to Amazon for the 3 Minutes to Midnight if you're interested in checking those out, and I highly suggest you do. I was going to ask you real quick before I let you go where folks can find your work, but I guess you kind of laid that out already, sir. So let me go ahead one more time and thank
you. Well, yeah, any bookstore, website, ajtata.com. I've got all the books there. There's more books, but those are the ones that are currently out in the bookstores, Foreign and Domestic and 3 Minutes to Midnight.
All right. Well, thank you very much, sir. I appreciate all your efforts as far as the writing's concerned and as far as trying to help keep the folks educated, because I think there is a huge lack of that. And going around and doing shows like this, I think it goes a long way towards helping with that. God bless. Have a very blessed holiday season, a Merry Christmas, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk again soon.
Merry Christmas to you and your listeners, Tim. Thank you very much.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was, in fact, the General. And for those of you who may not be that familiar with A.J. Tata, he has become an author as of late, but he has been a foreign policy advisor. He is a retired brigadier general from the Army, and he has also served in the education areas as he worked as the chief operations officer of the Washington, D.C. public schools under Chancellor Michelle Reed, and as a superintendent of the 16th largest school district in the nation in Wake County, Raleigh, North Carolina. And most recently, his public service had him operating as Secretary of Transportation for the state of North Carolina. Again, links are in the show description if you are so inclined as to check them out. And I hope you guys enjoyed the interview as much as I did. I want to give a shout out to Mary, who's finally joined us in the chat room, said that she was looking at me at 3. There was actually a BTR-related delay on getting started. I was trying to get going. And for whatever reason, it didn't actually get me officially started until I think it was 3 minutes after. That's when I finally got my 5 second countdown. So I don't know what was up with that. But Mary, glad you're with us now. Hope you heard the interview, or at least most of it. Kind of glad. Oh, you think that's bad? I'm kind of glad you did miss earlier. I had dead air again, and I had no idea for how long. I actually ended up being disconnected. So I haven't had a chance to go back and edit last Wednesday night's issue yet. And now I'm going to have to go and see if how much dead space. I was on other pages. I was going for it, going down all the stories involving the Democrats whining about this foreign hacking and trying to blame that for Trump. And I'm sure you would have, and I would have appreciated it, but dadgummit. Did have somebody listening on the phone, and I did try reaching out to them to try and figure out exactly how much the dead air I had, and they just hung up immediately. I tried to talk to them. I guess they thought I was bringing them on the air. I don't know why they would have thought that. They couldn't have been hearing any air. But at any rate, I'll have to go back and fix that. But interesting interview, and I think it lays the points out quite well. We keep hearing from the left that it's dangerous to have this many generals working in a cabinet-level position, and that they're just going to be yes men for Trump. But in order to become a high-ranking officer in the modern military, you cannot simply be a yes man. These people will push back, and they will challenge Donald, especially in areas that they have experience and they know Donald does not. Beyond that, much like the private sector folks that he has selected at this point, as I pointed out in the interview, these are all results-driven people. They understand in the real world, it's not good enough to simply have good intentions. You have to have results. You have to have a target. You have to work towards reaching that goal. And once you reach your goal, you have to be able to evaluate, were you efficient in doing it? Is there yet a better way to do it? Can it be done if you didn't achieve? That is what these people have done their entire lives. And they have managed to be successful because of it. They're not accustomed to being able to sit back and rely on throwing more money from the taxpayers at whatever problem. If you're doing well in something, it's easy to hide the problems because the success side of it covers up the failure part of it. I'll use the example of one I'm very familiar with from my days as being a manager in a quick service restaurant way back in the day. There are bonuses that go online for store managers. Assistant managers also bonus as well within this particular system. But what happens time and time again is that the stores that are making the most money, that have the most cash flowing through them, it's easy to cover up issues of shrink, areas where you're wasting more product than you should be. You're losing more product than you should be. Product is disappearing, whether it's through theft or whatever. When things are going well on one side of it, you can cover up where they're not. These people have not been able to rely on things like that. They have been required to find where the failures are at and how to fix them. And they have managed to achieve their success by being good at what they do and accomplishing those goals, those agendas, those directives, whether they were established by themselves or by their superiors before they rose to a power of authority, a position of authority. That's who Trump's been picking. These are all good people. Folks on the left need to grow up, and they need to accept the fact that Donald Trump is the president-elect. That after the Electoral College has their little meeting tomorrow, he will officially be the president-elect, and it will be just a matter of a few days remaining after that, next month, where he will take the oath of office and become the 45th president of the United States. They need to deal with it. But, like the general mentioned, the left's still trying to stoke the fires of unrest. One of the stories I saw earlier, there was a council person in Washington State. I forget now if it was Seattle or not, but I'm thinking it was. But she was out at a protest rally, and she was talking about how they're going to shut things down. The left are going nuts, and they're willing to utilize whatever they can, including inciting of violence if necessary, to try and shut down the inauguration. To do whatever they think they can to prevent Donald Trump from taking the oath of office and becoming the next person to occupy the White House. They got to move past it. Now, like I mentioned, I did the outrage of the week as the first story of the day. And that outrage of the week, and I honestly, at this point, I think my connection lasted for the majority of that, so everyone should have heard it, but it was Michelle Obama's interview with Oprah. And how she's talking about now they can feel what it's like to not have hope. That's not something you do when you're trying to help with the peaceful transition of power. You know, that very thing that she and her hubby and the Democratic nominee were all talking about was one of the greatest strengths of this nation going into the election, back when they were demanding that Donald Trump be willing to accept the results of the election. The very thing they can't seem to. And see, Donald told him exactly straight up, I will accept it as long as I think it's right. But I'll fight it if I think I've gotten cheated. Well, the thing is, they know they cheated. And they just weren't able to cheat enough. And they still didn't win. And that's why they can't accept that there was that much of the American people, an actual honest-to-goodness landslide of the American people, strong enough to overcome their efforts at voter fraud. And we know they did it. We know they did. They do it every year. It's absolutely astounding how every election cycle, people who the entirety of their lives voted Republican, conservative, or independent, suddenly become the staunchest Democratic voters ever after they died. It's amazing how many times that Superman and Mickey Mouse will vote for a Democratic candidate. It happens. Voter fraud happens. And despite the folks on the left trying to diminish voter fraud, despite how the folks on the left try to continue to make it easy for those who are not eligible to vote in our elections to do so via the lack of ID laws, for voting, and via the automatic voter registration efforts through getting your driver's license, especially in states that offer driver's licenses to illegal aliens. It's an astounding fact that we see time and time again, and they can't get over it because they honestly thought once they had Barack Hussein Al-Akbar Obama occupying the White House that there was absolutely no way they would ever lose power again. They believe that. They cannot believe that the American people, those poor, stupid American people, those folks that we have to tell them what to eat and how to think and who to vote for, those folks that we have to tell them what's okay for them to watch on television, and we have to control the ideas that they're exposed to when they're supposed to be getting an education, to the point that now 22-year-olds need safe spaces from the idea of a conservative being on campus, compared to the Americans that stormed the beaches of Normandy, the sometimes 17-year-olds who lied about their age and went and saw their friends blown into small pieces and still charged the beach anyway because it was the right freaking thing to do. How could people like that still be alive in America now? How could people like that still believe in the America that was and would be willing to vote for someone that just might, even if it was just accidentally, get something right in comparison to voting for someone they knew was the personification of self-serving evil agenda, Miss Hillary Rodham Clinton. They can't accept it. They can't accept the fact that it was the information that was released in the hacked emails that caused trouble for their campaign, not who hacked it. They can't accept the fact that WikiLeaks keeps saying it wasn't the Russians who gave us the information. It was people who had legal access to the documents, people who had to have worked for Hillary Clinton's campaign. They can't accept that. Even after one of those said people, former Clinton campaign person, was killed in the very same park that one of the WikiLeaks former UK ambassador said he went to collect these emails. No, we can't accept that. We can't accept the fact that more people find themselves into the morgue after crossing the Clintons in one fashion or another than to believe for a second that the American people might just simply be tired of all the bovine excrement. The American people might actually be to the point where we want the possibility of someone who's going to care about the economy. We know that Donald Trump is a sideshow barker. We know that he uses the media, but we also know that he has been, by most people's definition, a successful businessman. He has taken $1 million loan to get started. Okay, well, that's a little more than most of us have the option to start with. But considering that his business was real estate development in the New York area, $1 million is actually a pretty small amount to get started with. That sounds kind of absurd to most folks out here where I am in flyover country, where, you know, we think $1 million is enough to live our life on. And a lot of us probably could. But that's still a heck of a lot better than being one of those people that does nothing but live off of taxpayer dollars to self-indulge and to move their own ideological agendas, which really do nothing to serve the people, but instead serve lining their own pockets. Period. I have yet to hear the first leftist complain about all the foreign powers that try to influence Hillary Clinton by virtue of contributions and donations to the Clinton Family Slush Fund. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean the Clinton Foundation. I've yet to hear the first word from a Clinton supporter who even was willing to acknowledge the possibility that she was peddling influence as opposed to anything else. We know Bill Clinton is a sexual predator. We know Hillary Clinton is figuratively and literally in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood, just as much as Bill is. Uma? We know these things. Now, we can't prove them. It's reckless for me to even comment on them because there's no way I can prove them. But we know these things to be true. There's no question. There's no doubt. We've seen it. We've seen all the signs. Smart people with experience know how to recognize patterns. The Clintons are criminals. Now, I have seen, based on some of these internal memos to Chelsea at the Clinton Foundation, maybe Chelsea has been kept out of that loop. Maybe she really doesn't know what kind of worthless criminal scum her parents are. Maybe that's true, or maybe that's just more political theater to try and distance Chelsea from Bill and Hillary in the event that the FBI under Donald Trump actually does convict Hillary for her violation of handling classified materials in an illegal fashion. Or maybe someone finally steps up and will testify against Bill as far as the many times he's been guilty of sexual assault. Now, Mary in the chat room is convinced that Chelsea knows everything. And, you know, maybe she does. But if the Clintons have any humanity in them at all, and I'm not willing to concede that there is zero yet, I don't know why. I guess that's what little bit of the benefit of the doubt I'm still willing to give them. I know that if I was a parent, no matter how bad of a person I was, I wouldn't want my daughter to know all the evil, corrupt, manipulative things that I've done. I would want her to think that we had done these things as legitimately as possible, while, of course, teaching her to be ruthless and going to getting what she wants. And it would be little by little in increments. And the criminal aspects I probably would never reveal to her. Evidence that suggests that she at least doesn't know about the pay-to-play at the Clinton Foundation, that she was kept out of that loop as much as possible. That being internal memos. But as we know, an internal memo is, I could write a memo right now saying, I never realized that the company I work for makes fudge. And I could ask point blank, I could send a memo to my boss, at what point in time did we begin making fudge? I was unaware of this. Now, does that give legitimacy to that memo? Well, I can tell you right now, it shouldn't. Because I've known from the beginning that's the primary source of the business. But that's not relevant. The fact that this memo does exist and it had to be leaked does indicate that perhaps it's at least worth knowing about and considering. It doesn't prove anything. Just like the story that I was telling you at the beginning with the WikiLeaks folks still claiming that Russia is not behind the leaked emails that they published. Again, they have no reason to lie about it, as far as I know, other than possibly hoping to protect their source. If the Russians were their source, they obviously wouldn't want to reveal that. Technically, they haven't revealed any source. But we'll see. Now, as I was talking about before, I had to call the general and have him on. I don't know if this story isn't just political theater where they're playing it out to try and give some credibility to the Clinton private email server investigation, or if it's just simply a distraction point, or if there's actually legitimate infighting going on between current members of the Obama administration and the Hillary Clinton campaign. Because again, let's not forget, as much as the Democratic Party wanted Hillary in next, there was a lot of personal animosity between the Clintons and the Obamas. They don't like each other at all. At all. Bill Clinton, in talking to the last of the Kennedys, and I say the last of the Kennedys because, of course, we're talking about Ted, the last one actually to have a presidential run. Obviously, there are more Kennedys roaming around, but none of them are in any real political positions at the moment. I mean, a few are in politics, but nothing strong. They're not likely to emerge as powerhouses in the Democratic Party anytime soon. Mostly because despite the many flaws that the Kennedy family had, and their lack of compunction, of course, as far as using their positions to garner more wealth of themselves, they did have a genuine belief that with great blessings can create responsibilities, which is the topic I'd actually like to touch on before the end of the show. As long as any of these Kennedys still have that family value, the current Democratic National Party is going to have little use for them other than to borrow their namesake. But with Loretta Lynch defending the FBI against allegations from John Posada, Posada, Podesta, Hawaii, Potato, potato. John Podesta. The question mark is, why is Podesta so upset? He's upset because his candidate lost. Why is Loretta upset? Well, because Podesta is out here saying, if you'd paid more attention to the fact that Russia was trying to hack our emails before, maybe my candidate wouldn't have lost. Again, like I said earlier, John, hacked emails isn't why Hillary Clinton lost. The fact that she is a self-serving, I'm trying to put the adjectives that aren't completely profane at the moment, because I don't, the Roku show, this show does play on Roku, and I'm required to keep it PG-14 for that. Mr. Podesta, Hillary Clinton is a lying, self-serving aristocrat who believes that the lessers in society are literally beneath her. That's what I'm supposed to believe from the beginning. That's why the Rodham family is one of the founding members of the Bilderberger Group. No matter what you think about the tinfoil hat crowd's beliefs in what the Bilderbergers are up to, there's no denying the fact that the Bilderbergers exist. There's no denying that they look for a certain type of person to attend their meetings. And there's no question that the Rodhams were one of the founding members of said group. These things are all facts. They cannot be debunked because they are true. Period. End of. So is this political theater? Or is this legitimate internal conflict within the party because two rival camps within the party are unhappy with each other? Did the Obamas secretly hope that Hillary would lose? Did they have to keep it a secret? Did they play the FBI investigation card the way they did for the last minute exchange so that even people on MSN were saying, hey guys, maybe we shouldn't have nominated someone who was under FBI investigation? Was that all part and parcel? Was it part of this grand political theater that once again Hillary got screwed? I mean, let's face facts. If the Democratic Party was excited about it, and for regular listeners, I know you've heard me say this before multiple occasions, but for new listeners, I'll say it all over again. If the Democratic Party was that excited about Hillary Clinton, the then upstart and relatively unknown Barack Hussein Alu Akbar Obama, who burst onto the scene in 2007 to run in 2008, could have never, never gotten the nomination from her. It simply wouldn't have been possible. So there's a lot of Democrats, or people that typically vote Democratic, that wanted nothing to do with Hillary. And that has nothing to do with a Republican war on women. That has nothing to do with the fact that people are instinctively misogynistic. Excuse me. That has to do with the fact that she is an immensely unlikable, hateful being that oozes both darkness and the distinct smell of bovine excrement, which seems to be my phrase of the day. People are over the BS. They're tired of it. But right now, it looks like the Democrats, part and parcel, are looking to interfere with the peaceful transition of power. Real quick, I want to touch on a couple other stories before we run out of time. And since I'm about to hit the 15-minute mark for what I'll be able to do here, I'm definitely about to be out of time. Everybody knows now that Facebook has decided they're going to start marking fake news. And as far as the links that are being shared. See, we've been talking a lot about fake news lately. And naturally, fake news to most liberals is anything that tells a story they don't like. Well, that must be fake. And, you know, I tried having a show not too long ago where we talked a lot about fake news and how I felt like even I'm part of the problem with the fake news. Because, as I'm sure some of you remember, the regular listeners, in the past, I have been known to pick some fake news stories and talk about them as if they were real. And I did that to see who was paying attention. You know, that was meant to be fun for me. And I have to admit that I'm very happy to say that most of the regular listeners, especially the long-timers like Mary, who's in the chat room right now, without fail, you guys called me out on it right away. Now, I tried to keep a straight face. A few times I had to chuckle. But I always tried to keep a straight face and keep going because I wanted to see what kind of comments and remarks I would get from other folks. And I'm very pleased to say that the majority of the people that listen to this show, they got it. They called me out. They knew immediately. And then once I let them know what I was doing, you guys were like, really? It's like, why would you do that? That's not the smartest thing in the world. And you'd lose credibility. But always without fail, the next episode, I would come out and say, all right, last week's topics were fake, and here's why I did it. But if I let you know that I was doing it ahead of time. But I did it a couple of times after that, once I'd established the fact that we like to talk about fake news, too. Sometimes they can be funny. It can be funny to see what the reactions are. It can be funny to see just what the story is. If anybody at all will believe some of the fake news that's been going around for a while. But we've had a lot of folks on the left who are not blaming the Russians for Hillary's loss, who are blaming fake news. And they put a lot of pressure on Facebook. So Facebook announced a couple of weeks ago that they were going to try to stop allowing fake news posts to be shared. And now they have announced, of course, they're going to be using Snoops and a couple of other private firms to try and help them ferret out which stories are fake news and which stories are not. Problem with Snoops is, while it had a great reputation initially, especially if you're trying to talk about celebrity gossip or urban legends, once they started looking into the world of politics, they've been flat out busted at least four times that I know of. And I've heard folks say there's been a bunch of other times, but there's at least four occasions that I know myself personally that they've been busted as saying things were not true that were, because they didn't like the fact that it put a leftist politician in a bad light. And in a lot of these cases, it was either Barack Obama or it was Hillary Clinton, actually in all three cases. And then there was at least two occasions where they claimed that a story about Donald Trump, true, that was in regards to some of the charitable things that Mr. Trump has been engaged with. There's a reason to be concerned about Snoops, is really what I'm trying to tell you. They cannot be trusted when it comes to the land of the political. Reason why? Well, they are very politically minded themselves. And like a lot of other social media places, with the exception of folks like TeaPartyCommunity.com, for example, most social media sources have very left-leaning people that work for them as executives and as administrators. So you have to be concerned about what information they had. Now, obviously, the fine folks at Facebook simply are appalled by the very idea that they may have actually contributed to spreading information that prevented Hillary Rodham Clinton from becoming the next president. Boo-hoo, wah-wah, the truth got out. But now Snoops will now have the power to declare what's news, what news is, or what is not legitimate on the world's largest online platform. Thing is, almost exclusively employees known and professed leftist. Facebook announced Thursday that myth-busting website Snoops will be one of the few fact-checking organizations allowed to label stories as fake news. But almost all the writers churning out fact checks for Snoops have a well-documented liberal background, and many of them have expressed contempt for Republican voters. Difficult to identify a single Snoops fact checker who comes from a conservative background. In fact, at this point, I would make that a challenge. If anybody out there can find someone who is a fact checker for Snoops that has a conservative background, please let me know. Now, Snoops, of course, has gotten requests from folks like the Daily Caller to submit some of their employees to questionnaires and to general questions about the site's ideological leanings. In other words, can you please self-identify? Let us know yourself instead of let's just take and make assumptions based on your past. Imagine that, a journalist trying to access journalism. But at least two of the site's fact checkers joined Snoops after writing for Raw Story. In case you don't know Raw Story, and I'd say that would be difficult these days if you're an avid social media junkie, you have undoubtedly seen links to political stories from Raw Story. But Raw Story is a website that is, quote, a far-left publication that describes itself as a progressive news site that focuses on stories often ignored in the mainstream media. Okay, translation for those of you who need it. They self-identify as progressive news site, and they're saying they're focusing on stories that the mainstream media is ignoring, which means it's stories that is so far biased with so little background and provable facts that even the ultra-leftist mainstream media isn't willing to report on it. The stories that are too far left for the left-wing media. That's self-described. Now, Snoop's managing editor, a Brooke Benosky, has said on Twitter that Brexit supporters were, quote, pandering to racist mouth breather, Britain first types. Pandering to racist mouth breather, Britain first types. Yeah, that was worth saying again, wasn't it? Snoop's fact checker, Arturo Garcia, is an editor at large for Raw Story. And Garcia is also a managing editor of a pro-Black Lives Matter blog called Racialicious. One of Garcia's most recent stories at Raw Story was titled, "The Next Time Your Right-Wing Uncle Tries to Ruin the Holidays with Proof of Creationism. Show Him These Videos," which of course then had several links to various videos. Now, back when Trump was reportedly considering launching his own media network, Garcia implied that it would be a TV channel for white people, calling it white entertainment television. Now, since it's okay to have black entertainment television, right offhand, I'm not sure what's wrong with that, but it could be that Arturo was right about that, and, you know, that's fine. White people need entertainment, too. Excuse me. Why can only black people and Hispanics have entertainment on television? Why can I not turn on Bravo and see something that isn't promoting gay and homosexual lifestyles? Why, and in case you don't recall, Bravo and A&E and those folks were supposed to have started as artsy and highbrow. And I'm sorry, but the fact that you like to get involved sexually with members of the same gender doesn't make you highbrow. It doesn't mean you're not, but it doesn't automatically mean you are. I mean, I remember when the Discovery Channel was about science. I remember when the History Channel was about history instead of ancient aliens. I remember how a lot of these networks started out as one thing and are something completely different now. Y'all remember Disney Family Channel? Now it's called Freeform, and that's because they have no idea what the hell their programming is about. It's the weirdest, strangest crap they can find, and okay, it still kind of appeals to teens, sort of, older teens. And, of course, millennials who never grew up. So we've got all that. Problem is that this is going to be who's responsible for telling us what is and isn't fake news, when I'm not certain that they're capable of understanding what news is, period. I had to give a small dramatic pause there. You know, it's the Christmas season, so I want to be positive, and I want to go out with a positive note. But when you talk about stories like that, that's why I went with that story, because that story, I think, for most of us, comes out as being pretty funny. Thankfully, most of us that are on the right side of the political spectrum, we use Facebook not as a means to collect information, but as a means to share information with others. No, Mary, I didn't have dead air right there. That was a dramatic pause. But thank you for asking and checking and being sure. Right now with BTR, who knows? But those of us on the right, we don't use Facebook or Twitter as a means to acquire information. We use it as a means to share information. Are there some people that are still falling for fake news sites? Yeah. But most of those people don't care that it's fake news. They're only looking for something that plays to their point of view, that verifies and agrees with them and makes them feel like they were right all along, no matter how crazy that story is. But for others, and myself included, I've fallen for fake news stories before. In the early days of the social media, with the early beginnings of fake news, some of these sites that are made up to look like official ABC news and things of that nature. Not that you can expect there not to be propaganda and opinion at ABC, but you at least can usually say that if you spot it there, then there's probably truth to it if you've seen it somewhere else. Mary in the chat room says that leftists believe The Onion is a reliable news source. And The Onion, as most of us know by now, is strictly satirical. You're not meant to take them seriously, and you shouldn't. But you will occasionally still see Onion stories posted on Facebook and on Twitter. And people are trying to say, see, I told you all along. It's like, dude, it's from The Onion. Seriously. That's part of the society that we've evolved into. We live so much of our lives now digitally. We spend so much time on social media that some of us have lost our ability to use rational thought, to use critical thinking, and to focus on what's most important about news, and that is that you get the facts of what's going on. Folks on the left can't handle facts because they want to twist how you feel. They're required to use emotion and, some cases, to be dishonest to acquire the type of emotional response they need to push their agenda. But at the end of the day, it's up to each and every one of us to vet our information sources and determine what is real and what isn't. And then we have to decide, are we going to be responsible and share only information that we know is true? Or maybe see how many people we can trick. Utilize fake information to try and help bolster our own agenda. Because after all, why should we have higher standards than the main network news organizations anyway? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. Sorry about the technical issues, and glad to have you all here just the same. Of course, we'll be here next Wednesday. We'll be joined by Doug Giles. We'll be talking about his latest book. You know, it seems like last time he was here, we were talking about a different book, and now a new one's already coming out. And we'll probably talk a little bit about Trump's inauguration and all that. Don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Use your brain and be prepared to put in some effort on your part if you really want to tap into the truth. Have a great week, everybody, and hopefully I will see you again next Wednesday night.